Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by the beat reporters Jim Thomas and Matthew DeFranks. Guys, we're taping this a few hours before number 91 takes the ice again, this time for the New York Rangers. JT, you've seen a few of these reunions, but here's a guy that's put in a tremendous amount of time for the Blues, part of the Stanley Cup winning team. His name is way up the list on records. Not just another guy coming in for his video tribute.
Yeah. It's been like every homestand for really since the trade deadline that somebody has come in. Heck, even Jim Montgomery got a little scoreboard recognition and a mention the other day with the Boston Bruins. But I think you said several chats ago that as great as Tarasenko has been with the Blues, that you thought maybe he was still maybe a little underrated in terms of what he's done with the team and for the team. And I totally agree with you, Jeff. He, again, maybe not the most popular with all of his teammates, although a lot of teammates swear by him. Robert Thomas is one, but done a lot for the organization. And certainly they have a hard time winning that cup without him during the 18-19 season.
Yeah, and I think just as an outsider for most of Tarasenko's career, I think for me it's looking at the different eras that he spanned. Really, I mean, when he first arrived, it was a team that was losing in the first round a lot of times, right? The end of the Hitchcock era, and you know they had that one run to the conference final, but outside of that, it wasn't quite that team that burst through. And then obviously the contention years and winning the cup. And this era, whatever we want to call it now, but just to see the longevity and the amount of time that he's been with the organization, to see it through all of these different stages, and I think that's something that the fans recognize with him. I remember talking to someone, you know, saying that Tarasenko is the reason that they love hockey now, because when they were growing up, he was coming in and scoring goals and being an exciting player for the Blues. So I think he means a ton to the fan base, just seeing everything that he's done with the organization and seeing the organization through.
You know, JT, the thing that strikes me about how he's been, you know, maybe underappreciated, because he did manage to keep an extremely low profile. He did not loved to do interviews, and pretty much off the ice stayed to himself and his family. But it was interesting and quite cool and quite memorable to see during the Cup parade, him and his family and the kid, you know, little guy so wound up. And, you know, fans had a chance to connect with him in that moment, you know, and they really haven't had too many chances to have a real personal connection with a guy who just, you know, he just valued his privacy.
Yeah, he did. And totally, totally a family guy. I think a pretty devout Christian. I was always struck by the fact that he's Orthodox, as most of the Russians are in the NHL. And he'd always the little two or three of the little Russian Orthodox icons he'd have at his home locker and his away locker. And I would say Tarasenko, Binnington, there in terms of the fans, even as much as the fans love Perron. But and the one thing about Vladdy, he reveled or just in the adoration from the fans. He loved that. You could tell whenever he was like a number one star after the game and Darren Pang is interviewing down on the bench, and you know, you can only hear every other word of what they're, but the fans just loved him, and you could tell that Tarasenko just basked in the appreciation from the fans. I had one fan, I don't know if it was email or Twitter, said that he's worn a 91 jersey to Blues games every game for 10 years, and that tonight would be the last night that he would wear the Tarasenko 91 jersey. So, you know, who knows what he'll replace it with. Maybe Tyler Pitlick. I don't know.
You know, I want to ask Matt, as for frame of reference, looking back to your covering the Stars, and I think of Tyler Seguin coming in. He didn't start his career there, but basically his career took off there. And then, of course, Jamie Benn and how long they've played. You know, and then we think about, of course, Kane, you know, having to end his time somewhat awkwardly with the Blackhawks. I mean, these guys, there are plenty of good examples. And then Joe Pavelski should have ended his career with San Jose and didn't. He's had a great second run with the Stars. But, yeah, it's a special thing when guys can do it and have a long run with one team. But, man, I just wish it would happen more.
Yeah, I wonder if Jamie Benn in Dallas ends up doing that. I think he seems like a guy that would understand his next contract won't be what his current one is, and maybe he stays there a little bit longer. But yeah, as I was thinking about Tarasenko, I was actually reminded about Benn in a much different way. Because when I was in Dallas covering Benn, I never really got to see the Art Ross Benn, you know, that watched him come into the league and be a true power forward that could score, could fight, could hit, could kind of do everything. And, you know, obviously him and Tarasenko play in different ways, but I feel like I never saw the prime Tarasenko. Obviously I saw him from afar, but that's much different than seeing him, you know, for entire seasons at a time. And, you know, this was a guy where you would be kind of afraid of when he would take you wide and put his shoulder down and drive the net and have that power that he skated with and the finishing ability. I remember even that second round series in 2019, I believe Benn Bishop was talking about how tough Tarasenko is to go up against. And I don't know if regret's the right word, but for me, I never truly saw the excitement behind Tarasenko during my brief times here so far.
Well, JT, he's not that dynamic player this year that he was last year. We really got a flashback and saw him producing at his normal level. Still a good player, but I think for the going to the Rangers, an interesting situation. To me, this was about as good an outcome for both sides, given the circumstances. I think Vladdy would have appreciated maybe leaving sooner than he did, but he was a good citizen. Despite, not getting the trade when he wanted it, he still did his job. But the Blues did find the right team for him. He had control of situation, so obviously he was able to guide that too. But good outcome. He's on a really good Rangers team. His buddy Artemi Panarin's there. Additionally, they had Patrick Kane, who got dinged up, but is still ready for, I think will be ready for the playoffs. That's a fun team. And, as Lady tries to figure out his next job and, where the market will take him, good outcome for him, and the fact that the Blues were able to make the deal Doug Armstrong did was a good outcome for the Blues at the end of the day.
Oh, no doubt about it. First off, I mean, if we could just go back to last season. What a comeback season for Vladdy after just two seasons marred by shoulder surgery. He's exposed. He's there in the expansion draft. Seattle, he's right there, and Seattle doesn't want him. Not much trade interest. I was told that that first off season, Vladdy said, "Hey, I'll go anywhere." He just wanted out, and there was just no market for him after those two seasons. So as crabby as he was that off season, once the regular season showed up, he just behaved himself. He just showed up, behaved himself, did his thing, and he scores 34 goals, and he wasn't a distraction at all. There was a little blip this previous off season where at the draft, I guess it came out that Tarasenko has not rescinded his trade offer, but again, he showed up to camp this year and just behaved himself, went about his business. It could have been a lot messier. He could have made it a lot messier. And then, I totally agree with the Rangers. He couldn't have picked a better spot. He and Panarin are very tight. We all remember Vladdy, and I wasn't even on the hockey beat then. He lobbied for the Blues to pick up Panarin years ago. The tote board is still interesting on Tarasenko and Blay. I mentioned this to Blay about 2 years ago. You're 2 weeks ago, excuse me, that you've scored more goals than Vladdy. And Blay said, "Well, that'll change by the end of the season." Well, we have just four games left in the regular season for both teams, and Vladdy has 7 goals, 10 assists, 17 points in 27 games, and Blay has 8 goals, 11 assists, and 19 points in 27 games for the Blues. So who would have thought that Sammy Blay would be more productive than Vladdy? Of course, Vladdy's playing time is down. It's down about a minute and a little more than a minute and a half. He's getting just under 16 minutes with the Rangers, whereas Blaze has really spiked. He's up like five. He's getting about 14 and a half minutes a game, about 5 minutes more than he was getting with the Rangers.
Yeah, it's crazy to look at what Blay was in that trade. because when it first happened, I kind of looked at it as more of a throw-in than anything, kind of help the Rangers clear some cap space, get a player that's motivated, going to be a UFA. There's really no risks there for the Blues at that point. If it doesn't work out, he's a UFA, he can walk. And if it does, you have a productive player. And you know, if you really want to say the first is for, you know, Tarasenko, the third was for Mikkola, Skinner was to replenish whatever, when they brought up Tyler Tucker to the NHL, to replenish the AHL team, and Blais was a throw-in. It's interesting to see that he has been pretty productive and obviously has since re-signed in St. Louis for next year. But yeah, the situation that the Rangers have for Tarasenko is a good one. And JT, you talked about the Rangers being a fun team. My dad actually texted me this morning. He goes, yeah, the Rangers are fun to watch. He must have watched the Lightning game last night. I think they had a lot of entertainment going on in that one in New York. So it's going to be an interesting situation to see how deep the Rangers can go coming out of the East. A lot of tough matchups there. And especially, I think they're going to have New Jersey to start. So it'll be a lot of speed, a lot of fun in that series. But definitely a good situation for Tarasenko to finish the season with.
And speaking of Laddie, one of his new buddies, I guess, or I don't know what we would call him, an acolyte or a trainee or whatever, but Alexei Toropchenko, one of the good stories, the Blues are trying to use the end of the season to get ready for next year. He has been very effective and now on a fourth line with two guys trying to get a contract for next year. This has been Toropchenko's been one of the good stories in addition to Blay for the end of the season as this team gets ready for next year.
Yeah, he's never going to be a big scorer, but he's been driving the net more, just taking shots more. He's got looking at my notes here, 3 goals, 2 assists in his last 5 games. He's got 9 goals, 9 assists for the season, so. You get a fourth line guy that's around 10 goals. That's pretty good. You can get better at that stuff. I mean, I know Thomas has a much better shot. We still don't see it enough, but he worked on that for more than one off season. He worked on that. And Toropchenko, maybe he needs to get a hold of Ryan O'Reilly, get some of those juggling drills and hand eye coordination drills, and he can get better at that. But he's got everything else. I mean, he can skate. He's not averse to contact. He goes hard all the time. He plays that North game that Berube likes. So, yeah, that has been a good story. And, you know, he certainly has cemented a place and for him on the roster. And it probably will never be more than at most a third line guy. But he's the type of fourth line guy you love to have.
Yeah, I agree with so much of what JT just said there. I mean, he's a modern day fourth liner who, between the size and the skating you want to have in that bottom six with his penalty kill ability as well. It's funny. I think every goal that he scored in the last week has maybe bumped up his contract this summer, just slightly a bit more. I mean, if he can get to double digit goals, maybe he's pining for a little bit more money in the offseason as an RFA. But more than the goals themselves, I kind of look at the situations in which he scored goals that are more telling to me. The other night was an empty netter. So, and that means the coaching staff trusts him to be on the ice to close down a 1-goal lead before in Chicago. It's making against Vancouver, making plays in his own zone that leads to rush chances going the other way. Even the other night, he had the nice pass to Pitlick that set up Pitlick's goal. So, he's making plays coming out of his own zone. He's killing penalties well, and he's got one shorthanded goal this season. So another situation in which kind of the defense leads to offense, and he's been very responsible. He's been one of the first two forwards, I think, on the ice for penalty kills a lot in recent weeks. So clearly the coaching staff trusts him. He is what he probably is at this point. I'm not sure there's ever going to be, you know, 20 goals in him, but he's at 9 this year. Maybe he can get to 15 one year, but he is someone that fits in well on a modern fourth line.
Yeah, just one thing he has which you cannot teach, and that is the ridiculous wingspan, right? Which, you know, could serve him well when you're trying to kill a penalty, and also could serve you well if you can use it. He'll never shoot the puck like Tage Thompson, because that shot's always been there since, you know, when he was just a raw kid in the NHL, that shot was there. But, you know, you look at how a guy with that sort of wingspan can create shot angles and can get pucks around the initial defender and get passes around the initial defender. I mean, there's something there just with the wingspan. But, you know, of course, big guys can take so long to develop because they have to also learn to skate, you know, get stronger and do all the horrible punishing things, JT, that you have to do in that role, because you're not going to be cast as a figure skater at 6'6". I mean, you're going to be cast in the role that he's in. And that's a pretty tough job.
Yeah, and it helps him. You know that Berube really likes him. I mean, we used to joke earlier in the season that Berube had a man crush on him. I mean, he just loves everything about Toropchenko's game. Just a little aside here, I want to mention Nico Mikkola, too, coming back. And to me, it strikes me, this is a classic case of free agency. It was the same in the NFL with football. You're patient with these guys. You develop them. And then, especially if you're a successful team with cap problems, a lot of times you can't keep the player. The Blues were, it's not that they didn't want Mikkola, they just weren't going to be able to afford him. And now he goes there and he's flourishing. And I think in Matt's story, which is online right now, Post-Dispatch listeners at STL Today, you mentioned Mikkola has been getting some time with Adam Fox, right? He's been getting some top pairing minutes. His playing time has actually been going up. But you know, it hurt Berube to lose a guy like Mikkola, who had the long wingspan, like you talk about with Toropchenko, and he's just kind of coming into his own right now.
Yeah, I think recently he's been playing with Schneider, but his minutes are up two minutes a game from when he was in St. Louis, and the most common defense partner for him has been Adam Fox. So, you know, as we know that the pairings change all the time, but he's got a lot of run with Fox. On the right hand sidecar on a Norris Trophy level defenseman, but he's also got some time with Braden Schneider going up and down the lineup.
Well, JT, we're seeing it's going to be interesting to see what the intrepid T-Birds can do to finish out their season. But between now and then, the Blues are giving some guys a taste of what the NHL looks like, you know, what an NHL dinner looks like, what an NHL road trip might look like, what everything looks like at this level. And there's really a lot to be said for that, because that, again, you're trying to build a stronger organization. A lot of these guys are getting looks are no more than depth players, but you need depth players too.
Yeah, you sure do. And we've talked about this before, that most of their guys, and with the exception of Perunovic, most of the guys in Springfield are guys that are 5, 6, 7 defensemen in your structure, maybe a fourth guy. And Tucker falls in that mode. Matthew Kessel falls in that mode. And Samurikov, the Blues have had so many trades and stuff. I had to how do they get Samurikov? He was way back when they traded for Klim Kostin. And he came up, I think it was shortly after Matthew DeFranks parachuted onto the scene, and he was with the Blues for 2 or 3 games, but never gotten a game. And his wife had come, and like 2 days after his wife showed up, he was sent back down to Springfield. But it's partly you get a little look at these guys, and Kessel, he was fine, you know, nothing spectacular, but he showed kind of what he is in those couple of games. He's a kind of a plays that simple game. Can skate pretty well for a big guy, has a decent shot, although he didn't show it much. And now Samurikov, I remember talking to Bannister, this was a couple months ago, but was just doing a little update on the Springfield roster. And he said Samurikov, he had the first 3-4 weeks, it was a tough adjustment, but that he'd really, really been playing well down there. So this is kind of a reward for him. And the Blues are carrying only 6 healthy defensemen right now, so he's got to play. So it'll be fun to see him play. And as Matt can attest, if beat writers have a rooting interest, it's for the good quotes. And Samurikov's pretty funny. It would be nice if he had a regular spot on the roster, because we've lost some great quotes over the last year or so.
Yeah, even this morning when we were talking to him, JT reminded Dmitry that, you know, he went to school with Alexei Toropchenko, and I think Samurikov was saying that Toropchenko was better at school because he showed up more. And then he followed that up with saying, Yeah, some days I was smart like Torpchenko and I went to school, and some days I was smart like me and already had all the answers. So he's kind of funny. I mean, and I was talking about all the different defense pairs, defense partners he's had in Springfield. And I think this is just, you know, the last few games, you know, it's Perunovic, Skinner, Malmstrom, Osmanski, Skinner, Malmstrom, Osmanski. So he's had kind of a different partner every single game. And he joked, yeah, I was pitching my partner. I would point to guys and say, you're my partner tonight. And he was joking about that and joking about being the playing left, playing right, playing different roles, being the backup goalie. So he's got a good sense of humor. I think we'll see what happens tonight, but I think he should get more than four shifts that he did in his NHL debut in St. Louis. So should be a better memory to have.
Yeah, playing for Edmonton, and Kyrou lit him up a couple times, and 2 minutes, 28 seconds of playing time, and Dmitry Samarkov was benched, and that's his entirety of an NHL regular season existence for him. So it'll be good to see him. And I'm sure if they let Matt vote on the final seven defensemen, you might have him as your number seven, just the quote factor, right?
Yeah, just the good guy in the room factor, right? You know, just a class clown sort of factor, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the vibe seems reasonably good for the group. You know, it was interesting to see comments Colton Parayko had about, you know, the team's been playing better. It's racked up some points. You could tell there's, you know, some talent here. They're going to have some talent going into next year. It's not maybe going to be a juggernaut, but it's not going to be a bad team. You know, and they've played some teams that aren't the best, and like the Flyers, and they've gotten some points that way. But, you know, this we've seen the team at its worst, I suppose, this year, and it could have been back to that level, I suppose, after the trade deadline. But, you know, guys are going to go into the golfing season, it seems, in a pretty good frame of mind.
Yeah. They, you know, they won three straight after Tarasenko was traded. But when the O'Reilly and Achari, I mean, the O'Reilly really was a blow to a lot of players, even though, I mean, they should have seen it coming. But they went 1-6-2, the immediate aftermath of the O'Reilly trade. But once they got over that, they played pretty good hockey, even losing to some of these playoff teams, Vegas, Boston in a shootout. They played pretty well. You could just see the kind of the malaise was gone, and they and who knows what they have, but I think we're all, even though they've kind of cooled off lately, I think we haven't had a goal from Blais, Kapanen, or Vrana in the last three games. I noticed when Buchnevich was at center that he really looked for Kapanen. And I think Kapanen has missed not having Buchnevich out there at center. Now, I forget, you know, Buchnevich is going to play tonight. You know, he wasn't going to miss the playing his old team, the Rangers, if he could help it. But I don't know if they're on the same line. Maybe Matt knows. But that might perk things up for that trio a little bit.
As of yesterday, Kapanen was still centering his own line. I was laughing at today's.
Well, that's right. Yeah, we're not going to see Thomas, so yeah, it'll probably be Kapanen at center.
I was laughing at today's lineup. I think there was one natural center in it with Braden Schenn, because Buchnevich, Kapanen, and Walker are all playing center, all as converted wings. Yeah, but I think this closing stretch to the season is reminding me of when Joel Hofer was up and he had, you know, his first start of the season, he had that shutout against Winnipeg to follow up, and there were all those good feelings that he had, and we were saying, you know what, just bottle that up, bottle up the good feelings, because they could be going away soon. And he had that outing in LA, and the good feelings went away, and he's back in Springfield. And we look at the upcoming schedule for the Blues, and four playoff teams, three of them with a lot to play for, with Minnesota, and then twice against Dallas. So we look at this these past 11 games, and is it 7-2-2? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So bottle up those good feelings, just in case. Oh,
wait a minute. I think Adrian Kempe he just scored another goal against Hofer. So add that to your scorebook there. Yeah. 7-6, I believe that game was.
I mean, that was an entertaining game though. The the good feelings maybe coming to an end with Minnesota, Dallas fighting for first place, and we'll see what kind of lineups they field. But I don't think it's going to be like the Bruins when they came in here and sat down Bergeron and Krejci, McAvoy. I don't think the Wild and the Stars will be doing that.
No, I'm sure the especially Mr. Hartman will be hoping that Jordan Binnington is in goal. Just a quick thing I want to add. We're talking about Springfield and lack of centers. Don't forget about Nikita Alexandrov in the equation. Not as more than a third line guy, probably a four line, but he's really heating it up now. I think he's got 11 points in his last six games in Springfield. He hadn't even played 40 games down there, because remember, he's played half the season up here, but he's about at a point per game. And I'm sure if it were different circumstances, he would probably be up here centering the fourth line instead of Nathan Walker. But again, in terms of the center issue for next year, I'm sure they're counting on Nikita to be on that fourth line.
When you do look at Walker and you do look at Pitlick and they're finishing, these are guys that are just desperate to get another contract, right? Just would like to, like Pitlick said, be nice to stay in the same place for more than a bit. But, you know, they played all right. And so they're minimum wage guys. Veteran guys, there's probably going to be room for at least one of them, I would guess. Mm-hmm. What's your take on how that might fit in the depth? I mean, it's not the most exciting topic, trying to figure out who are going to be the depth forwards, but nonetheless, this is part of this late season process.
Yeah, and you have to really like, I mean, we all wax nostalgically about during the Cup run, what was it, Steen, Barbashev, and Sundqvist were the fourth line down the stretch and in the playoffs. And it seems like they've been searching for that. A fourth line can really help you. And they've maybe, I don't know, these last, maybe coinciding with the 7-2-2 stretch, this Torbchenko, Walker, and Pitlick has been very effective. And they popped in a goal every now and then. I've kind of gone back and forth on Pitlick. Like for a while, I was like, yeah, you know, no way. But lately I'm like, you know, you need two extra forwards. You know, maybe you offer him a contract, a minimum contract for next year, and see what happens, because you don't know if a Zach Dean or a Zach Bolduc will surprise and earn a roster spot, or if Armstrong, you know, he said at the last time we talked to him in like a group setting that he wanted to add another top nine forward somewhere, be it in free agency or via trade. So you don't know how that's going to work out, but I think Pitlick has at least worked himself back into discussion. Walker, he's such a fun guy to watch. He's such a fun guy to talk to. But you know, for most of the season, I was kind of disappointed in him, because he scored 8 goals in like 40 games last year, and he's got only 2 this year. And, but just the way he plays, he's like a little bulldog out there. He's never far from the scrum. You don't mess with Nathan Walker if you're with the other team, no matter how big you are. And, you know, he's been killing some penalties lately. So again, I think he's another guy that at least deserves to be, you know, in camp. I think he's already under contract for next year. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, JT, you're right. He's already under contract at lead minimum next year. So, I mean, I think he kind of fits in as a 13th forward kind of guy. If you look at the fourth line as Blay, Alexandrov, and Torbchenko in some sort of fashion, you know, when Armstrong did talk at the trade deadline, you know, he ran through the roster and counted out 8 top nine guys, and Blay wasn't one of them. Jake Neighbors was. So you add in that top nine forward, probably a center. And you look at the fourth line of Blay, Alexandrov, Torbchenko, Walker as a 13th forward. You have recall options down there. If it's an offensive guy, maybe you look for Bolduc. If you need a center in a middle six kind of role, maybe you look at Dean. You know, you have your other guys down there that could maybe fill in every now and then. Bitten, Petra, those kind of guys. But you probably do need some sort of more veteran depth in case your first year pro guys aren't ready. There's no need to really rush them to the NHL. You want to let them kind of get their feet wet in the AHL, see how they do, and if they're ready for the NHL, call them up at that point. But I find it tough to believe that those two guys will be ready right out of the gate to be in the NHL. So maybe you do need another veteran presence, just as someone that can go in and out of the lineup and play that role.
One last thing on the net front for this week. You mentioned the Wild likely to show up ready to play. Maybe Marc-Andre Fleury looking for a fight. Maybe Hartman going to the net hard. But this is to be one of the better stories in the league. I mean, the Wild, you looked at them losing Kevin Fiala and them having to eat some Parise money and dealing with the cap issues that they had. It this seemed like it was set up to be an in-between or even a big down year for the Wild. What a job. And I hope that somebody has been producing the Dean Evason T-shirts, because he's got the greatest look on his face all the time. Yeah. His resting face is, like I said, is like the guy who just found the rabid raccoon foraging through his pantry. He has that look of just horror and anger combined over everything. He has that look perpetually frozen into his face. And what a job. JT, I mean, we knew it's a good team, of course. But for them to do what they did after losing such an important player, point per game guy that could really juice your offense, and guys having years that were well short offensively of what they had done the year before, look at what they've done.
Yeah, you hate those raccoon incidents, Jeff. I mean, they're just no good for anybody. No, I totally agree. Jeff, he scares me. Dean Evason scares me just looking at him. Is he like that, like on his birthday when he's blowing out the birthday cake? Does he have it? You know, I always look at every year. I look at the Wild and say, okay, not a bad team, but I never, and I know Kaprizov, he's a fantastic player, but it is amazing every year, especially since Dean the Dream has been there. I think they overachieve, and I think the Cup is going to the East this year. There's so many quality teams, but man, the Central Division playoffs, just to watch that, how it unfolds. And I think you definitely don't want the 2-3 matchup in the Central. You want to try to get that number one spot. And I think that's why these games are going to be, they're going to be all out with both Minnesota and the two with Dallas.
Yeah. There's a real carrot there to finish first and avoid that 2-3 matchup. You finish first in the Central, you get Seattle, and then you don't have to face Colorado or Minnesota or Dallas until the second round. So there's really a big incentive there. And as far as Minnesota, Gordo, I think Bill Guerin deserves a lot of credit too. I mean, you look at the Suter buyout, the Parise buyout, them still adding pieces at the deadline with Sundqvist and Klingberg, and still even taking on money as a third team to facilitate, you know, the Ryan O'Reilly trade for one. And I think there was one more trade they were part of. It was the Dmitry Orlov one. They were a third team there. So to be able to have the buyouts on the books, to be able to add your own players at the deadline, take on extra money to accumulate draft capital and be in the fight for first place, that's a pretty good year for Bill Guerin. Now, I still do think Colorado is probably the team to beat in the Central. Most teams, when they don't have their captain and, you know, third best forward, I would say, Landeskog, they're not going to be fighting for a division crown. And here they are doing that without him, with some time missed from MacKinnon, time missed from Makar. They're still a very good team. And I think if you can avoid them in the first round, you'll be in a much better spot.
Yeah, and one more shout out to Guerin. I mean, he had Cam Talbot got pissy on him, and he traded Talbot, got a better goal. It turns out a better goaltender in that deal. I mean, he's got a tremendous goaltending tandem. I don't think anybody thought Gustafson would be quite that good, but he is. A lot of achievement, not so much in St. Louis, but an interesting division for sure. So that's been another edition of the NetFront Presence. A reminder that you can get all of our content online, in addition to so much more content online, and with our podcasts and our videos and all the things that we do, in addition to the print the content you have in the newspaper. We appreciate all of your support for local journalism. Please keep supporting us, and we'll keep giving you the really good content. For Jim Thomas, for Matt DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. Until next time, see ya.